Disc 2.
Chapter 5. Miss Blacklock and Miss Bunner. Little Paddocks was very much as Detective Inspector Craddock had imagined it to be. He noted ducks and chickens, and what had been until lately an attractive herbaceous border, and in which a few late Michaelmas daisies showed a last dying splash of purple beauty. The lawn and the paths showed signs of neglect. Summing up, Detective Inspector Craddock thought, probably not much money to spend on gardeners. Fond of flowers, and a good eye for planning and massing a border. House needs painting. Most houses do nowadays. Pleasant little property. As Craddock's car stopped before the front door, Sergeant Fletcher came round the side of the house. Sergeant Fletcher looked like a guardsman, with an erect military bearing, and was able to impart several different meanings to the one monosyllable, sir. "So, there you are, Fletcher."
"Sir,"
said Sergeant Fletcher. "Anything to report?"
"We've finished going over the house, sir. Shirts doesn't seem to have left any fingerprints anywhere. You wore gloves, of course. No signs of any of the doors or windows being forced to effect an entrance. He seems to have come out from Medenham on the bus, arriving here at 6 o'clock. Side door of the house was locked at 5:30, I understand. Looks as though he must have walked in through the front door. Miss Blacklock states that that door isn't usually locked until the house is shut up for the night. The maid, on the other hand, states that the front door was locked all the afternoon. But she'd say anything. Very temperamental, you'll find her. Mittel Europa refugee of some kind.
Difficult, is she?"
"Sir," said Sergeant Fletcher with intense feeling. Craddock smiled. Fletcher resumed his report. "Lighting system is quite in order everywhere. We haven't spotted yet how he operated the lights. It was just the one circuit went, drawing room and hall. Of course, nowadays the wall brackets and lamps wouldn't all be on one fuse, but this is an old-fashioned installation and wiring. Don't see how he could have tampered with the fuse box, because it's out by the scullery and he'd have had to go through the kitchen, so the maid would have seen him."
"Unless she was in it with him."
"Well, that's very possible. Both foreigners. And I wouldn't trust her a yard. Not a yard."
Craddock noticed two enormous, frightened black eyes peering out of a window by the front door. The face, flattened against the pane, was hardly visible.
"That her there?" "That's right, sir."
The face disappeared. Craddock rang the front doorbell. After a long wait, the door was opened by a good-looking young woman with chestnut hair and a bored expression. "Detective Inspector Craddock," said Craddock. The young woman gave him a cool stare out of very attractive hazel eyes and said, "Come in. Miss Blacklock is expecting you." The hall, Craddock noted, was long and narrow and seemed almost incredibly full of doors. The young woman threw open a door on the left and said, "Inspector Craddock, Aunt Letty. Mitzi wouldn't go to the door. She shut herself up in the kitchen, and she's making the most marvellous moaning noises. I shouldn't think we'd get any lunch." She added in an explanatory manner to Craddock, "She doesn't like the police," and withdrew, shutting the door behind her. Craddock advanced to meet the owner of Little Paddocks. He saw a tall, active-looking woman of about 60. Her grey hair had a slight natural wave and made a distinguished setting for an intelligent, resolute face. She had keen grey eyes and a square, determined chin. There was a surgical dressing on her left ear. She wore no makeup and was plainly dressed in a well-cut tweed coat and skirt and pullover. Round the neck of the latter she wore, rather unexpectedly, a set of old-fashioned cameos, a Victorian touch which seemed to hint at a sentimental streak not otherwise apparent. close beside her, with an eager round face and untidy hair escaping from a hairnet, was a woman of about the same age, whom Craddock had no difficulty in recognising as the Dora Bunner companion of Sergeant Legg's notes, to which the latter had added in an off-the-record commentary of Scatty. Miss Blacklock spoke in a pleasant, well-bred voice. "Good morning, Inspector Craddock. This is my friend Miss Bunner, who helps me run the house. Won't you sit down? You won't smoke, I suppose?" "Not on duty, I'm afraid, Miss Blacklock." "What a shame." Craddock's eyes took in the room with a quick, practised glance. Typical Victorian double drawing room. Two long windows in this room, built-out bay window in the other, chairs, sofa, centre table with a big bowl of chrysanthemums. Another bowl in the window. All fresh and pleasant, without much originality. The only incongruous note was a small silver vase with dead violets in it on a table near the archway into the further room. Since he could not imagine Miss Blacklock tolerating dead flowers in a room, he imagined it to be the only indication that something out of the way had occurred to distract the routine of a well-run household. He said, "I take it, Miss Blacklock, that this is the room in which the incident occurred." "Yes."
"And you should have seen it last night," Miss Bunner exclaimed. "It was such a mess. Two little tables knocked over, and the leg off one. People barging about in the dark, and someone put down a lighted cigarette and burnt one of the best bits of furniture. People, young people especially, are so careless about these things. Luckily, none of the china got broken."
Miss Blacklock interrupted gently but firmly. "Dora, all these things, vexatious as they may be, are only trifles. It will be best, I think, if we just answer Inspector Craddock's questions." "Thank you, Miss Blacklock. I shall come to what happened last night presently. First of all, I want you to tell me when you first saw the dead man, Rudy Schertz."
"Rudy Schertz?" Miss Blacklock looked slightly surprised. "Is that his name? Somehow I thought... Oh,
well, it doesn't matter. My first encounter with him was when I was in Medenham Spa for a day's shopping about... about 3 weeks ago. We, Miss Bunner and I, were having lunch at the Royal Spa Hotel. As we were just leaving after lunch, I heard my name spoken. It was this young man. He said, 'It is Miss Blacklock, is it not?' and went on to say that perhaps I did not remember him, but that he was the son of the proprietor of the Hotel des Alpes at Montreux, where my sister and I had stayed for nearly a year during the war." "The Hotel des Alpes, Montreux," noted Craddock. "And did you remember him, Miss Blacklock?"
"No, I didn't. Actually, I had no recollection of ever having seen him before. These boys at hotel reception desks all look exactly alike. We had had a very pleasant time at Montreux, and the proprietor there had been extremely obliging. So I tried to be as civil as possible, and said I hoped he was enjoying being in England. And he said, yes, that his father had sent him over for 6 months to learn the hotel business. It all seemed quite natural."
"And your next encounter?"
"About... yes. It must have been about 10 days ago. He suddenly turned up here. I was very surprised to see him. He apologized for troubling me, but said I was the only person he knew in England. He told me that he urgently needed money to return to Switzerland, as his mother was dangerously ill."
"But Letty didn't give it to him," Miss Bunner put in breathlessly.
"It was a thoroughly fishy story," said Miss Blacklock with vigour. "I made up my mind that he was definitely a wrong 'un. That story about wanting the money to return to Switzerland was nonsense. His father could easily have wired for arrangements to have been made in this country. These hotel people are all in with each other. I suspected that he'd been embezzling money or something of that kind." She paused and said dryly, "In case you think I'm hard-hearted, I was secretary for many years to a big financier, and one becomes wary about appeals for money. I know simply all the hard-luck stories there are." The only thing that did surprise me, she added thoughtfully, was that he gave in so easily. He went away at once without any more argument. It's as though he had never expected to get the money. Do you think now, looking back on it, that his coming was really by way of a pretext to spy out the land? Miss Blacklock nodded her head vigorously. That's exactly what I do think, now. He made certain remarks as I let him out, about the rooms. He said, you have a very nice dining room, which of course it isn't. It's a horrid dark little room. Just as an excuse to look inside. And then he sprang forward and unfastened the front door and said, let me. I think now he wanted to have a look at the fastening. Actually, like most people round here, we never lock the front door until it gets dark. Anyone could walk in. And the side door? There is a side door to the garden, I understand. Yes. I went out through it to shut up the ducks not long before the people arrived. Was it locked when you went out? Miss Blacklock frowned. I can't remember. I think so. I certainly locked it when I came in. That would be about 6:15. Somewhere about then. And the front door? That's not usually locked until later. Then Schertz could have walked in quite easily that way. Or he could have slipped in whilst you were out shutting up the ducks. He'd already spied out the lie of the land, and had probably noted various places of concealment, cupboards, etc. Yes, that all seems quite clear. I beg your pardon, it isn't at all clear, said Miss Blacklock. Why on earth should anyone take all that elaborate trouble to come and burgle this house and stage that silly sort of hold-up? Do you keep much money in the house, Miss Blacklock? About £5 in that desk there. Perhaps a pound or two in my purse. Jewellery? A couple of rings and brooches, and the cameos I'm wearing. You must agree with me, Inspector, that the whole thing's absurd. It wasn't a burglary at all, cried Miss Bunner. I've told you so, Letty, all along. It was revenge. Because you wouldn't give him that money. He deliberately shot at you. Twice. Ah, said Craddock. We'll come now to last night. What happened exactly, Miss Blacklock? Tell me in your own words, as nearly as you can remember. Miss Blacklock reflected a moment. The clock struck, she said. The one on the mantelpiece. I remember saying that if anything were going to happen, it would have to happen soon. And then the clock struck. We all listened to it without saying anything. It chimes, you know. It chimed the 2 quarters, and then, quite suddenly, the lights went out. What lights were on? The wall brackets in here and the further room. The standard lamp and the 2 small reading lamps weren't on. Was there a flash first, or a noise when the lights went out? I don't think so. I'm sure there was a flash, said Dora Bunner. And a crackling noise. It's dangerous. And then, Miss Blacklock? The door opened. Which door? There are 2 in the room. Oh, this door here. The one in the other room doesn't open. It's a dummy. The door opened, and there he was. A masked man with a revolver. It just seemed too fantastic for words. But, of course, at the time, I just thought it was a silly joke. He said something, I forget what. It was, hands up or I shoot, supplied Miss Bunner dramatically. Something like that, said Miss Blacklock rather doubtfully. And you all put your hands up. Oh, yes, said Miss Bunner. We all did. I mean, it was part of it. I didn't, said Miss Blacklock crisply. It seemed so utterly silly, and I was annoyed by the whole thing. And then? The flashlight was right in my eyes. It dazzled me. And then, quite incredibly, I heard a bullet whiz past me and hit the wall by my head. Somebody shrieked, and then I felt a burning pain in my ear and heard the second report. It was terrifying, put in Miss Bunner. And what happened next, Miss Blacklock? It's difficult to say. I was so staggered by the pain and the surprise. The figure turned away and seemed to stumble. And then there was another shot, and his torch went out, and everybody began pushing and calling out, all banging into each other. Where were you standing, Miss Blacklock?
She was over by the table. She'd got that vase of violets in her hand, said Miss Bunner breathlessly.
I was over here. Miss Blacklock went over to the small table by the archway. Actually, it was the cigarette box I'd got in my hand. Inspector Craddock examined the wall behind her. The two bullet holes showed plainly. The bullets themselves had been extracted and had been sent for comparison with the revolver. He said quietly, "You had a very near escape, Miss Blacklock."
"He did shoot at her," said Miss Bunner. "Deliberately at her. I saw him. He turned the flash round on everybody until he found her, and then he held it right at her and just fired at her. He meant to kill you, Letty."
"Dora, dear, you've just got that into your head from mulling the whole thing over and over."
"He shot at you," repeated Dora stubbornly. "He meant to shoot you, and when he missed, he shot himself. I'm certain that's the way it was."
"I don't think he meant to shoot himself for a minute," said Miss Blacklock. "He wasn't the kind of man who shoots himself." "You tell me, Miss Blacklock, that until the revolver was fired, you thought the whole business was a joke?"
"Well, naturally.
What else could I think it was?" "Who do you think was the author of this joke?"
"You thought Patrick had done it at first," Dora Bunner reminded her.
"Patrick?" asked the inspector sharply. "My young cousin, Patrick Simmons," Miss Blacklock continued sharply, annoyed with her friend. "It did occur to me when I saw this advertisement that it might be some attempt at humour on his part, but he denied it absolutely."
"But then you were worried, Letty," said Miss Bunner. "You were worried, although you pretended not to be. You are quite right to be worried. It said a murder is announced, and it was announced. Your murder. And if the man hadn't missed, you would have been murdered. And then where should we all be?"
Dora Bunner was trembling as she spoke. Her face was puckered up, and she looked as though she were going to cry. Miss Blacklock patted her on the shoulder. "It's all right, Dora dear. Don't get excited. It's so bad for you. Everything's quite all right. We've had a nasty experience, but it's over now." She added, "You must pull yourself together for my sake, Dora. I rely on you, you know, to keep the house going. Isn't it the day for the laundry to come?"
Oh, dear me, Letty, how fortunate you reminded me. I wonder if they'll return that missing pillowcase. I must make a note in the book about it. I'll go and see to it at once."
"And take those violets away," said Miss Blacklock. "There's nothing I hate more than dead flowers."
"Oh, what a pity. I picked them fresh yesterday. They haven't lasted at all. Oh, dear, I must have forgotten to put any water in the vase. I fancy that. I'm always forgetting things. Now, I must go and see about the laundry. They might be here at any moment."
She bustled away, looking quite happy again. "She's not very strong," said Miss Blacklock, "and excitements are bad for her. Is there anything more you want to know, Inspector?" "I just want to know exactly how many people make up your household here, and something about them." "Yes, well, in addition to myself and Dora Bunner, I have two young cousins living here at present, Patrick and Julia Simmons."
"Cousins? Not a nephew and niece?"
"No. They call me Aunt Letty, but actually they are distant cousins. Their mother was my second cousin." "Have they always made their home with you?" Oh, dear, no. Only for the last 2 months. They lived in the south of France before the war. Patrick went into the Navy, and Julia, I believe, was in one of the ministries. She was at Llandudno. When the war was over, their mother wrote and asked me if they could possibly come to me as paying guests. Julia is training as a dispenser in Milchester General Hospital. Patrick is studying for an engineering degree at Milchester University. Milchester, as you know, is only 50 minutes by bus, and I was very glad to have them here. This house is really too large for me. They pay a small sum for board and lodging, and it all works out very well. She added with a smile, I like having somebody young about the place. Then there is Mrs. Hames, I believe. Yes. She works as an assistant gardener at Dyer's Hall, Mrs. Lucas's place. The cottage there is occupied by the old gardener, and his wife and Mrs. Lucas asked if I could billet her here. She's a very nice girl. Her husband was killed in Italy, and she has a boy of 8 who is at a prep school and whom I have arranged to have here in the holidays. And by way of domestic help? A jobbing gardener comes in on Tuesdays and Fridays. A Mrs. Huggins from the village comes up 5 mornings a week, and I have a foreign refugee with a most unpronounceable name as a kind of lady cook help. You will find Mitzi rather difficult, I'm afraid. She has a kind of persecution mania. Craddock nodded. He was conscious in his own mind of yet another of Constable Legg's invaluable commentaries. Having appended the word scatty to Dora Bunner and all right to Letitia Blacklock, he had embellished Mitzi's record with the one word, liar. As though she had read his mind, Miss Blacklock said, Please don't be too prejudiced against the poor thing, because she's a liar. I do really believe that, like so many liars, there is a real substratum of truth behind her lies. I mean that, though, to take an instance, her atrocity stories have grown and grown until every kind of unpleasant story that has ever appeared in print has happened to her or her relations personally. She did have a bad shock initially, and did see one, at least, of her relations killed. I think a lot of these displaced persons feel, perhaps justly, that their claim to our notice and sympathy lies in their atrocity value, and so they exaggerate and invent. She added, Quite frankly, Mitzi is a maddening person. She exasperates and infuriates us all. She is suspicious and sulky, is perpetually having feelings and thinking herself insulted. But in spite of it all, I really am sorry for her. She smiled. And also, when she wants to, she can cook very nicely. I'll try not to ruffle her more than I can help, said Craddock soothingly. Was that Miss Julia Simmons who opened the door to me? Yes. Would you like to see her now? Patrick has gone out. Philippa Hames you will find working at Dyer's Hall. Thank you, Miss Blacklock. I'd like to see Miss Simmons now, if I may. Chapter 6. Julia, Mitzi, and Patrick. Julia, when she came into the room and sat down in the chair vacated by Letitia Blacklock, had an air of composure that Craddock, for some reason, found annoying. She fixed a limpid gaze on him and waited for his questions. Miss Blacklock had tactfully left the room. "Please tell me about last night, Miss Simmons."
"Last night?" murmured Julia with a blank stare. "Oh, we all slept like logs. Reaction, I suppose."
"I mean last night from 6 o'clock onwards."
"Oh, I see. Well, a lot of tiresome people came."
"They were..." She gave him another limpid stare.
"Don't you know all this already?"
"I'm asking the questions, Miss Simmons," said Craddock pleasantly.
"Oh, my mistake. I always find repetition so dreary. Apparently you don't. Well, there was Colonel and Mrs. Easterbrook, Miss Hinchcliffe and Miss Murgatroyd, Mrs. Swettenham and Edmund Swettenham, and Mrs. Harmon, the vicar's wife.
They arrived in that order, and if you want to know what they said, they all said the same things in turn. I see you've got your central heating on. And what lovely chrysanthemums.
Craddock bit his lip. The mimicry was good.
The exception was Mrs. Harmon. She's rather a pet. She came in with her hat falling off and her shoelaces untied, and she asked straight out when the murder was going to happen. It embarrassed everybody because they'd all been pretending they'd dropped in by chance. Aunt Letty said in her dry way that it was due to happen quite soon. And then that clock chimed, and just as it finished, the lights went out, the door was flung open, and a masked figure said, "Stick 'em up, guys," or something like that. It was exactly like a bad film. Really quite ridiculous. And then he fired two shots at Aunt Letty, and suddenly it wasn't ridiculous any more. Where was everybody when this happened?
When the lights went out? Well, just standing about, you know.
Mrs. Harmon was sitting on the sofa. Hinch, that's Miss Hinchcliffe, had taken up a manly stance in front of the fireplace. You were all in this room or the far room?
Mostly, I think, in this room.
Patrick had gone into the other to get the sherry. I think Colonel Easterbrook went after him, but I don't really know. We were, well, as I said, just standing about.
Where were you yourself?
I think I was over by the window. Aunt Letty went to get the cigarettes.
On that table by the archway?
Yes. And then the lights went out and the bad film started.
The man had a powerful torch. What did he do with it?
Well, he shone it on us. Horribly dazzling. It just made you blink.
I want you to answer this very carefully, Miss Simmons. Did he hold the torch steady, or did he move it about?
Julia considered. Her manner was now definitely less weary.
He moved it, she said slowly, like a spotlight in a dance hall. It was full in my eyes, and then it went on round the room, and then the shots came. Two shots.
And then?
He whirled round, and Mitzi began to scream like a siren from somewhere, and his torch went out, and there was another shot. And then the door closed. It does, you know, slowly, with a whining noise. It's quite uncanny. And there we were, all in the dark, not knowing what to do, and poor Bunny squealing like a rabbit, and Mitzi going all out across the hall.
Would it be your opinion that the man shot himself deliberately, or do you think he stumbled and the revolver went off accidentally?
I haven't the faintest idea. The whole thing was so stagey. Actually, I thought it was still some silly joke, until I saw the blood from Letty's ear.
But even if you were actually going to fire a revolver to make the thing more real, you'd be careful to fire it well above someone's head, wouldn't you?
You would indeed. Do you think he could see clearly who he was firing at?
I mean, was Miss Blacklock clearly outlined in the light of the torch?
I've no idea. I wasn't looking at her. I was looking at the man.
What I'm getting at is, do you think the man was deliberately aiming at her? At her in particular, I mean.
Julia seemed a little startled by the idea.
Do you mean deliberately picking on Aunt Letty?
Oh, I shouldn't think so. After all, if he wanted to take a pot shot at Aunt Letty, there would be heaps of more suitable opportunities. There'd be no point in collecting all the friends and neighbours just to make it more difficult. He could have shot her from behind a hedge in the good old Irish fashion any day of the week. Probably got away with it.
And that, thought Craddock, was a very complete reply to Dora Bunner's suggestion of a deliberate attack on Letitia Blacklock. He said with a sigh, "Thank you, Miss Simmons. I'd better go and see Mitzi now."
"Mind her fingernails," warned Julia. "She's a Tartar."
Craddock, with Fletcher in attendance, found Mitzi in the kitchen. She was rolling pastry and looked up suspiciously as he entered. Her black hair hung over her eyes. She looked sullen, and the purple jumper and brilliant green skirt she wore were not becoming to her pasty complexion.
"What do you come in my kitchen for, Mr. Policeman? You are police, yes? Ah, always, always there is persecution. Ah, I should be used to it by now. They say it is different here in England, but now it is just the same. You come to torture me, yes, to make me say things, but I shall say nothing. You'll tear off my fingernails and put lighted matches on my skin, and, oh, yes, and worse than that, but I will not speak to you here. I shall say nothing. Nothing at all. And you will send me away to a concentration camp, and I shall not care."
Craddock looked at her thoughtfully, selecting what was likely to be the best method of attack. Finally, he sighed and said, "Okay, then. Get your hat and coat."
"What is that you say?" Mitzi looked startled.
"Get your hat and coat and come along. I haven't got my nail-pulling apparatus and the rest of the bag of tricks with me. We keep all that down at the station. Got the handcuffs handy, Fletcher?"
"Sir," said Sergeant Fletcher with appreciation. "But I do not want to come," screeched Mitzi, backing away from him.
"Then you'll answer civil questions civilly. If you like, you can have a solicitor present."
"A lawyer? I do not like a lawyer. I do not want a lawyer."
She put the rolling pin down, dusted her hands on a cloth, and sat down.
"What do you want to know?" she asked sulkily.
"I want your account of what happened here last night."
"You know very well what happened."
"I want your account of it."
"I tried to go away. Did she tell you that? Then I saw that in the paper saying about murder. I wanted to go away. She would not let me. She is very hard. Not at all sympathetic. She made me stay, but I knew what would happen. I knew I should be murdered."
"Well, you weren't murdered, were you?"
"No," admitted Mitzi grudgingly.
"Come now, tell me what happened."
"I was nervous. Oh, I was nervous. All that evening I hear things. People moving about. Once I think someone is in the hall moving stealthily. But it is only that Mrs. Hames coming in through the side door, so as not to dirty the front steps. She says much she cares. She is a Nazi herself, that one, with her fair hair and her blue eyes, so superior, and looking at me and thinking that I am only dirt."
"Never mind, Mrs. Hames.
Who does she think she is? Has she had expensive university education like I have? Has she a degree in economics? No. She is just a paid laborer. She digs and mows grass and is paid so much every Saturday. Who is she to call herself a lady?"
"Never mind, Mrs. Hames," I said. "Go on."
"I takes the sherry and the glasses and the little pastries I have made so nice into the drawing room. Then the bell rings, and I answer the door. Again and again I answer the door. It is degrading, but I do it. And then I go back into the pantry, and I start to polish the silver. And I think it will be very handy, that, because if someone comes to kill me, I have there close at hand the big carving knife, all sharp."
"Very foresighted of you."
"And then suddenly I hear shots. I think it has come. It is happening. I run through the dining room. The other door, it will not open. I stand a moment to listen, and then there comes another shot and a big thud out there in the hall, and I turn the door handle, but it is locked outside. I am shut in there like a rat in a trap, and I go mad with fear. I scream, and I scream, and I beat upon the door, and at last, they turn the key and let me out. And then I bring candles, many, many candles, and the lights go on, and I see blood.
Blood. Oh, God in himmels, the blood. It is not the first time I have seen blood. My little brother. I see him killed before my eyes. I see blood in the street. People shot and dying.
Yes, said Inspector Craddock. Thank you very much.
And now, said Mitzi dramatically, you can arrest me and take me to prison.
Not today, said Inspector Craddock. As Craddock and Fletcher went through the hall to the front door, it was flung open and a tall, handsome young man almost collided with them.
Sleuths as I live, cried the young man.
Mr. Patrick Simmons?
Quite right, Inspector. You're the inspector, aren't you? And the other's the sergeant.
You are quite right, Mr. Simmons. Can I have a word with you, please?
I am innocent, Inspector. I swear I am innocent.
Now then, Mr. Simmons, don't play the fool. I've a good many other people to see, and I don't want to waste time. What's this room? Can we go in here?
Well, it's the so-called study, but nobody studies.
I was told that you were studying, said Craddock.
I found I couldn't concentrate on mathematics, so I came home. In a businesslike manner, Inspector Craddock demanded full name, age, details of war service.
And now, Mr. Simmons, will you describe what happened last night?
We killed the fatted calf, Inspector. That is, Mitzi set her hand to making savoury pastries. Aunt Letty opened a new bottle of sherry.
Craddock interrupted. A new bottle? Was there an old one?
Yes, half full. But Aunt Letty didn't seem to fancy it.
Was she nervous, then?
Oh, not really. She's extremely sensible. It was old Bunny, I think, who had put the wind up her, prophesying disaster all day.
Miss Bunner was definitely apprehensive, then.
Oh, yes, she enjoyed herself thoroughly.
She took the advertisement seriously?
Scared her into fits.
Miss Blacklock seems to have thought, when she first read that advertisement, that you had had something to do with it. Why was that?
Ah, sure, I get blamed for everything round here.
You didn't have anything to do with it, did you, Mr. Simmons?
Me? Never in the world.
Had you ever seen or spoken to this Rudy Schertz?
Never seen him in my life.
It was the kind of joke you might have played, though.
Who's been telling you that? Just because I once made Bunny an apple pie bed and sent Mitzi a postcard saying the Gestapo was on her track.
Just give me your account of what happened.
I'd just gone into the small drawing room to fetch the drinks when, hey presto, the lights went out. I turned round, and there's a fellow standing in the doorway saying, stick your hands up, and everybody gasping and squealing. And just when I'm thinking, can I rush him, he starts firing a revolver, and then crash down he goes, and his torch goes out, and we're in the dark again. And Colonel Eastbrook starts shouting orders in his barrack room voice. Lights, he says. Will my lighter go on? No, it won't. This is the way of those cussed inventions.
Did it seem to you that the intruder was definitely aiming at Miss Blacklock?
Oh, how could I tell? I should say he just loosed off his revolver for the fun of the thing, and then found maybe he'd gone too far.
And shot himself?
It could be.
When I saw the face of him, he looked like the kind of little pasty thief who might easily lose his nerve. And you're sure you had never seen him before?
Never.
Thank you, Mr. Simmons. I shall want to interview the other people who were here last night. Which would be the best order in which to take them?
Well, our Philippa, Mrs. Hames, works at Dyer's Hall. The gates of it are nearly opposite this gate. After that, the Swettenhams are the nearest. Anyone will tell you.
Chapter 7. Among Those Present. Dyer's Hall had certainly suffered during the war years. Couch grass grew enthusiastically over what had once been an asparagus bed, as evidenced by a few waving tufts of asparagus foliage. groundsel, bindweed, and other garden pests showed every sign of vigorous growth. A portion of the kitchen garden bore evidence of having been reduced to discipline, and here Craddock found a sour-looking old man leaning pensively on a spade.
"It's Mrs. Ames you want? I couldn't say where you'd find her. Has her own ideas she has about what she'll do. You're not one to take advice. I could show her. Show her willing. What's the good? Won't listen, these young ladies won't. They think they know everything because they put on breeches and gone for a ride on a tractor. But it's gardening that's needed here. And that isn't learned in a day. Gardening. That's what this place needs."
"It looks as though it does," said Craddock. The old man chose to take this remark as an aspersion.
"Now look here, mister. What do you suppose I can do with a place this size? 3 men and a boy, that's what he used to have. And that's what he wants. There's not many men could put in the work on it that I do. Here sometimes I am till 8 o'clock at night. 8 o'clock.
What do you work by? An oil lamp?
Naturally, I don't mean this time of year. Naturally. Summer evenings I'm talking about."
"Oh," said Craddock. "I'd better go and look for Mrs. Hames." The rustic displayed some interest.
"What are you wanting her for? Police, aren't you? She been in trouble? Or is it the do there was up to Little Paddock's? Masked men bursting in and holding up a room full of people with a revolver? That sort of thing wouldn't have happened before the war. Deserters, that's what it is. Desperate men roaming the countryside. Why don't the military round them up?"
"I've no idea," said Craddock. "I suppose this hold-up caused a lot of talk?"
"Well, that it did. What's this coming to? That's what Ned Barker said. Comes of going to the pictures so much, he said. But Tom Riley, he says it comes of letting these foreigners run about loose. And depend on it, he says, that girl as cooks up there for Miss Blacklock and has such a nasty temper, she's in it, he said. She's a communist, or worse, he said. And we don't like that sort here. And Marlene, who's behind the bar, you understand, she will have it, that there must be something very valuable up at Miss Blacklock's. Not that you'd think it, she says, for I'm sure Miss Blacklock goes about as plain, except for them great rows of false pearls she wears. And then, she says, supposing as them pearls is real. And Florrie, what's old Bellamy's daughter, she says, nonsense, she says. Nouveau or, that's what they are. Costume jewellery, she says. Costume jewellery. That's a fine way of labelling a string of false pearls. Roman pearls, the gentry used to call them once. And Parisian diamonds. My wife was a lady's maid, and I know. But what does it all mean? It's just glass. I suppose it's costume jewellery that young Miss Simmons wears. Gold ivy leaves and dogs and such like. Isn't often you see a real bit of gold nowadays. Even wedding rings they make of this grey platinum stuff. Shabby, I call it. For all it costs the earth. Old Ash paused for breath and then continued. Miss Blacklock don't keep much money in the house. That I do know, says Jim Huggins, speaking up. He should know, for it's his wife as goes up and does for him at Little Paddock's. She's the woman as knows most of what's going on. Nosy, if you take me.
Did he say what Mrs. Huggins' view was?
That Mitzi's mixed up in it, that's what she thinks. Awful temper she had, and the hair she gives herself. Called Mrs. Huggins a working woman to her face the other morning.
Craddock stood a moment, checking over in his orderly mind the substance of the old gardener's remarks. It gave him a good cross-section of rural opinion in Chipping Cleghorn, but he didn't think there was anything to help him in his task. He turned away, and the old man called after him grudgingly.
Maybe you'd find her in the apple orchard. She's younger than I am for getting the apples down.
And sure enough, in the apple orchard, Craddock found Philippa Hames. His first view was a pair of nice legs encased in breeches, sliding easily down the trunk of a tree. Then Philippa, her face flushed, her fair hair ruffled by the branches, stood looking at him in a startled fashion. "Make a good Rosalind," Craddock thought automatically, for Detective Inspector Craddock was a Shakespeare enthusiast and had played the part of the melancholy Jaques with great success in a performance of As You Like It for the police orphanage. A moment later he amended his view. Philippa Hames was too wooden for Rosalind. Her fairness and her impassivity were intensely English, but English of the 20th rather than of the 16th century. Well-bred, unemotional English, without a sparkle of mischief. "Good morning, Mrs. Hames. I'm sorry if I startled you. I'm Detective Inspector Craddock of the Middleshire Police. I wanted to have a word with you." "About last night?"
"Yes."
"Will it take long? Shall we..." She looked about her rather doubtfully. Craddock indicated a fallen tree trunk. "Rather informal," he said pleasantly, "but I don't want to interrupt your work longer than necessary."
"Thank you."
"It's just for the record. You came in from work at what time last night?"
"At about 5:30. I stayed about 20 minutes later in order to finish some watering in the greenhouse."
"You came in by which door?"
"The side door. One cuts across by the ducks and the henhouse from the drive. It saves you going round, and besides it avoids dirtying up the front porch. I'm in rather a mucky state sometimes."
"You always come in that way?"
"Yes."
"The door was unlocked?"
"Yes. During the summer it's usually wide open. This time of the year it's shut, but not locked. We all go out and in a good deal that way. I locked it when I came in."
"Do you always do that?"
"I've been doing it for the last week."
"You see, it gets dark at 6. Miss Blacklock goes out to shut up the ducks and the hens sometime in the evening, but she very often goes out through the kitchen door."
"And you are quite sure you did lock the side door this time?"
"I really am quite sure about that."
"Quite so, Mrs. Hames."
"And what did you do when you came in?"
"Kicked off my muddy footwear and went upstairs and had a bath and changed. Then I came down and found that a kind of party was in progress. I hadn't known anything about this funny advertisement until then."
"Now, please describe just what occurred when the hold-up happened."
"Well, the lights went out suddenly."
"Where were you?"
"By the mantelpiece. I was searching for my lighter, which I thought I had put down there. The lights went out, and everybody giggled. Then the door was flung open, and this man shone a torch on us and flourished a revolver and told us to put our hands up."
"Which you proceeded to do?"
"Well, I didn't, actually. I thought it was just fun, and I was tired, and I didn't think I needed really to put them up."
"In fact, you were bored by the whole thing."
"I was, rather. And then the revolver went off. The shot sounded deafening, and I was really frightened. The torch went whirling round and dropped and went out, and then Mitzi started screaming. It was just like a pig being killed."
"Did you find the torch very dazzling?"
"No, not particularly. It was quite a strong one, though. It lit up Miss Bunner for a moment, and she looked quite like a turnip ghost, you know, all white and staring with her mouth open and her eyes starting out of her head."
"The man moved the torch?"
"Oh, yes. He played it all round the room."
"As though he were looking for someone?"
"Not particularly, I should say."
"And after that, Mrs. Hames?"
Philippa Hames frowned.
"Oh, it was all a terrible muddle and confusion.
Edmund Swettenham and Patrick Simmons switched on their lighters, and they went out into the hall, and we followed. And someone opened the dining room door. The lights hadn't fused in there. And Edmund Swettenham gave Mitzi a terrific slap on the cheek and brought her out of her screaming fit. And after that, it wasn't so bad.
You saw the body of the dead man?
Yes.
Was he known to you? Had you ever seen him before?
Never. Have you any opinion as to whether his death was accidental, or do you think he shot himself deliberately?
I haven't the faintest idea.
You didn't see him when he came to the house previously?
No. I believe it was in the middle of the morning, and I shouldn't have been there. I'm out all day.
Thank you, Mrs. Hames. One thing more. You haven't any valuable jewellery? Rings, bracelets, anything of that kind? Philippa shook her head.
My engagement ring, a couple of brooches.
And as far as you know, there was nothing of particular value in the house?
No. I mean, there is some quite nice silver, but nothing out of the ordinary.
Thank you, Mrs. Hames. As Craddock retraced his steps through the kitchen garden, he came face to face with a large red-faced lady, carefully corseted.
"Good morning," she said belligerently. "What do you want here?"
"Mrs. Lucas, I am Detective Inspector Craddock."
"Oh, that's who you are. I beg your pardon. I don't like strangers forcing their way into my garden, wasting the gardener's time, but I quite understand you have to do your duty."
"Quite so."
"May I ask if we are to expect a repetition of that outrage last night at Miss Blacklock's?"
"Is a gang?" "We are satisfied, Mrs. Lucas, that it was not the work of a gang."
"There are far too many robberies nowadays. The police are getting slack."
Craddock did not reply.
"I suppose you've been talking to Philippa Hames?"
"I wanted her account as an eyewitness."
"You couldn't have waited until 1 o'clock, I suppose. After all, it would have been fairer to question her in her time rather than in mine."
"I'm anxious to get back to headquarters."
"Not that one expects consideration nowadays, or a decent day's work. On duty late, half an hour's pottering, a break for elevenses at 10 o'clock. No work done at all the moment the rain starts. When you want the lawn mown, there's always something wrong with the mower, and off duty 5 or 10 minutes before the proper time."
"I understood from Mrs. Hames that she left here at 5:20 yesterday, instead of 5 o'clock.
"Oh, I dare say she did. Give her due, Mrs. Hames is quite keen on her work. Though there have been days when I've come out here and not been able to find her anywhere. She is a lady by birth, of course, and one feels it's one's duty to do something for these poor young war widows. Not that it isn't very inconvenient, those long school holidays, and the arrangement is that she has extra time off then. I told her that there are really excellent camps nowadays where children can be sent and where they have a delightful time and enjoy it far more than wandering about with their parents. They need practically not come home at all in the summer holidays."
"But Mrs. Hames didn't take kindly to that idea?"
"She's as obstinate as a mule, that girl. Just the time of year when I want the tennis court mowed and marked nearly every day. Old Ash gets the lines crooked. But my convenience is never considered."
"I presume Mrs. Hames takes a smaller salary than is usual?"
"Well, naturally. What else could she expect?"
"Nothing, I'm sure," said Craddock. "Good morning, Mrs. Lucas."
"It was dreadful," said Mrs. Swettenham happily. "Quite, quite dreadful. And what I say is that they ought to be far more careful what advertisements they accept at the Gazette office. At the time when I read it, I thought it was very odd. I said so, didn't I, Edmund?"
"Do you remember just what you were doing when the lights went out, Mrs. Swettenham?" asked the inspector.
Oh, how that reminds me of my old nanny. Where was Moses when the light went out? The answer, of course, was in the dark. Just like yesterday evening, all standing about and wondering what was going to happen. And then, you know, the thrill when it suddenly went pitch black and the door opening, just a dim figure standing there with a revolver and that blinding light and a menacing voice saying, "Your money or your life." Oh, I've never enjoyed anything so much. And then a minute later, of course, it was all dreadful. Real bullets just whistling past our ears. It must have been just like the commandos in the war.
Whereabouts were you standing or sitting at the time, Mrs. Swettenham?
Now, let me see, where was I? Who was I talking to, Edmund?
I really haven't the least idea, Mother.
Was it Miss Hinchcliffe I was asking about giving the hens cod liver oil in the cold weather? Or was it Mrs. Harmon? No, she'd only just arrived. I think I was just saying to Colonel Easterbrook that I thought it was really very dangerous to have an atom research station in England, that it ought to be on some lonely island in case the radioactivity gets loose.
You don't remember if you were sitting or standing?
What does it really matter, Inspector? I was somewhere over by the window or near the mantelpiece, because I know I was quite near the clock when it struck. Such a thrilling moment, waiting to see if anything might be going to happen.
You describe the light from the torch as blinding. Was it turned full onto you?
It was right in my eyes. I couldn't see a thing.
Did the man hold it still, or did he move it about from person to person?
Oh, I don't really know. Which did he do, Edmund?
It moved rather slowly over us all, so as to see what we're all doing, I suppose, in case we should try and rush him. And where exactly in the room were you, Mr. Swettenham?
I'd been talking to Julius Simmons. We were both standing up in the middle of the room, the long room.
Was everyone in that room, or was there anyone in the far room?
Philip Hames had moved in there, I think. She was over by that far mantelpiece. I think she was looking for something.
Have you any idea as to whether the third shot was suicide or an accident?
Oh, I've no idea at all. The man seemed to swerve round very suddenly and then crumple up and fall. But it was all very confused. You must realise that you couldn't really see anything. And then that refugee girl started yelling the place down. I understand it was you who unlocked the dining room door and let her out.
Yes. The door was definitely locked on the outside.
Edmund looked at him curiously.
Well, certainly it was. Why, you don't imagine. I just like to get my facts quite clear. Thank you, Mr. Swettenham.
Inspector Craddock was forced to spend quite a long time with Colonel and Mrs. Easterbrook. He had to listen to a long disquisition on the psychological aspect of the case.
The psychological approach, that's the only thing nowadays, the Colonel told him. You've got to understand a criminal. Now, the whole set-up here is quite plain to a man who's had the wide experience that I have. Why does this fellow put that advert in? Psychology. He wants to advertise himself, to focus attention on himself. He's been passed over, perhaps despised as a foreigner by the other employees of the Spa Hotel. A girl has turned him down, perhaps. He wants to rivet her attention on him. Who is the idol of the cinema nowadays, the gangster, the tough guy? Very well. He will be a tough guy. Robbery with violence. A mask? A revolver? But he wants an audience. He must have an audience. So he arranges for an audience. And then, at the supreme moment, his part runs away with him. He's more than a burglar. He's a killer. He shoots. Blindly.
Inspector Craddock caught gladly at the word.
You say blindly, Colonel Easterbrook.
You didn't think he was firing deliberately at one particular object? At Miss Blacklock, that is to say?
No, no, he just loosed off, as I say, blindly. And that's what brought him to himself. The bullet hit someone. Actually, it was only a graze, but he didn't know that. He comes to himself with a bang. All this make-believe he's been indulging in is real. He shot at someone. Perhaps killed someone. It's all up with him. And so, in blind panic, he turns the revolver on himself.
Colonel Easterbrook paused, cleared his throat appreciatively, and said in a satisfied voice,
"Plain as a pikestaff. That's what it is. Plain as a pikestaff."
"It really is wonderful," said Mrs. Easterbrook, "the way you know exactly what happened, Archie." Her voice was warm with admiration. Inspector Craddock thought it was wonderful too, but he was not quite so warmly appreciative. "Exactly where were you in the room, Colonel Easterbrook, when the actual shooting business took place?"
"I was standing with my wife, near a centre table with some flowers on it."
"I caught hold of your arm, didn't I, Archie, when it happened? I was simply scared to death. I just had to hold on to you."
"Poor little kitten," said the Colonel playfully.
The inspector ran Miss Hinchcliffe to earth by a pigsty.
"Nice creatures, pigs," said Miss Hinchcliffe, scratching a wrinkled pink back. "Coming on well, isn't it? Good bacon round about Christmas time. Well, what do you want to see me about? I told your people last night I hadn't the least idea who the man was. Never seen him anywhere in the neighbourhood, snooping about or anything of that sort. Ah, Mrs. Mopp says he came from one of the big hotels in Medenham Wells. Well, why didn't he hold up someone there if he wanted to? Get a much better haul."
That was undeniable. Craddock proceeded with his inquiries. "Where were you exactly when the incident took place?"
"Incident? Reminds me of my ARP days. Saw some incidents then, I can tell you. Where was I when the shooting started? That what you want to know?"
"Yes."
"Leaning up against the mantelpiece, hoping to God someone would offer me a drink soon," replied Miss Hinchcliffe promptly.
"Do you think that the shots were fired blindly or aimed carefully at one particular person?"
"You mean aimed at Letty Blacklock? How the devil should I know? Damned hard to sort out what your impressions really were or what really happened after it's all over. All I know is the lights went out, and that torch went whirling round, dazzling us all. And then the shots were fired, and I thought to myself, if that damned young fool Patrick Simmons is playing his jokes with a loaded revolver, somebody will get hurt."
"You thought it was Patrick Simmons?"
"Well, it seemed likely. Edmund Swettenham is an intellectual and writes books and doesn't care for horseplay. An old Colonel Easterbrook wouldn't think that sort of thing funny. But Patrick's a wild boy. However, I apologise to him for the idea."
"Did your friend think it might be Patrick Simmons?"
"Murgatroyd? You'd better talk to her yourself. Not that you'll get any sense out of her. She's down the orchard. I'll yell for her if you like."
Miss Hinchcliffe raised her stentorian voice in a powerful bellow.
"Hie up, Murgatroyd!"
"Coming!"
floated back a thin cry.
"Hurry up! Police!"
bellowed Miss Hinchcliffe. Miss Murgatroyd arrived at a brisk trot, very much out of breath. Her skirt was down at the hem and her hair was escaping from an inadequate hairnet. Her round, good-natured face beamed. "Oh, is it Scotland Yard?" she asked breathlessly. "I'd no idea, or I wouldn't have left the house."
"We haven't called in Scotland Yard yet, Miss Murgatroyd. I'm Inspector Craddock from Milchester."
"Well, that's very nice, I'm sure," said Miss Murgatroyd vaguely. "Have you found any clues?"
"Where were you at the time of the crime? That's what he wants to know, Murgatroyd," said Miss Hinchcliffe. She winked at Craddock.
"Oh, dear," gasped Miss Murgatroyd. "Of course, I ought to have been prepared. Alibis, of course. Now, let me see. I was just with everybody else."
"You weren't with me," said Miss Hinchcliffe.
"Oh, dear, Hinch, wasn't I?
Oh, no, of course. I'd been admiring the chrysanthemums. Very poor specimens, really. And then it all happened. Only I didn't really know it had happened. I mean, I didn't know that anything like that had happened. I didn't imagine for a moment that it was a real revolver. And all so awkward in the dark and that dreadful screaming. I got it all wrong, you know. I thought she was being murdered. I mean, the refugee girl. I thought she was having her throat cut across the hall somewhere. I didn't know it was him. I mean, I didn't even know there was a man. It was really just a voice, you know, saying, "Put them up, please." It was "stick 'em up," Miss Hinchcliffe corrected. And no suggestion of "please" about it. It's so terrible to think that until that girl started screaming, I was actually enjoying myself. Only being in the dark was very awkward, and I got a knock on my corn. Oh, agony it was. Is there anything more you want to know, Inspector? No, said Inspector Craddock, eyeing Miss Murgatroyd speculatively. I don't really think there is. Her friend gave a short bark of laughter. He's got you taped, Murgatroyd. I'm sure, Hinch, said Miss Murgatroyd, that I'm only too willing to say anything I can. He doesn't want that, said Miss Hinchcliffe. She looked at the inspector. If you're doing this geographically, I suppose you'll go to the vicarage next. You might get something there. Mrs. Harmon looks as vague as they make 'em, but I sometimes think she's got brains. Anyway, she's got something. As they watched the inspector and Sergeant Fletcher stalk away, Amy Murgatroyd said breathlessly, "Oh, Hinch, was I very awful? I do get so flustered." "Not at all," Miss Hinchcliffe smiled. "On the whole, I should say you did very well." Inspector Craddock looked round the big shabby room with a sense of pleasure. It reminded him a little of his own Cumberland home. Faded chintz, big shabby chairs, flowers and books strewn about, and a spaniel in a basket. Mrs. Harmon, too, with her distraught air and her general disarray and her eager face, he found sympathetic. But she said at once, frankly, "I shan't be any help to you, because I shut my eyes. I hate being dazzled. And then there were shots, and I screwed them up tighter than ever. And I did wish, oh, I did wish that it had been a quiet murder. I don't like bangs."
"So you didn't see anything?" The inspector smiled at her. "But you heard?"
"Oh, my goodness, yes, there was plenty to hear. Doors opening and shutting, and people saying silly things and gasping, and old Mitzi screaming like a steam engine, and poor Bunny squealing like a trapped rabbit, and everyone pushing and falling over everyone else. However, when there really didn't seem to be any more bangs coming, I opened my eyes, and everyone was out in the hall then, with candles. And then the lights came on, and suddenly it was all as usual. I don't mean really as usual, but we were ourselves again, not just people in the dark. And people in the dark are quite different, aren't they?"
"I think I know what you mean, Mrs. Harmon." Mrs. Harmon smiled at him.
"And there he was," she said. "A rather weaselly-looking foreigner, all pink and surprised-looking, lying there dead, with a revolver beside him. It didn't... oh, it didn't seem to make sense, somehow."
It did not make sense to the inspector, either.
The whole business worried him.
End of Disc 2.